This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. On my left, Ezra Ginsberg. On my far left, Dave Manuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network. He's our good friend, Jack Edwards. Jack, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Boys, it's been much too long of a summer. Good to chat with you again.
How's beautiful Long Island on a Saturday morning?
As dull as ever, you know, gray and lifeless. But I'll tell you how bad it is. It makes people want to move to Brooklyn.
Oh, zing. Exactly. You'll be able to see the Islanders in Brooklyn. But at least it'll be a lot more hipster next year when you guys visit there.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait. Hip-hop in a building built for basketball where the scoreboard's over one of the attacking zones. Just great. Can't wait.
Jack, the Bruins have started the year winning 8 of their first 12 games, you know, off to the, you know, sort of what we've become an expected, typical good start for this team. Is this a team right now, though, that feels it has unfinished business after losing in the Cup Finals last season?
You know, I'm not sure if they feel they have unfinished business so much as they were beaten by a true champion in Chicago. It was a great year for the Blackhawks, and at the end, the Blackhawks proved to be the better team, and it wasn't just the 17 seconds and the two-goal turnaround in Game 6. They are one of the few teams we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years who have been able to beat up the Bruins, just wear them down physically. And, you know, even if you want to play the game of ifs and buts, if the Bruins had managed to hang on, there isn't a doctor in the world who would have allowed Patrice Bergeron to get on a plane and fly to Chicago with a punctured lung. So no Bergeron, no win in Game 7. I just can't even imagine the Bruins doing that, no matter how good Tuukka Rask might have been. I just think they'd spend the whole night with the puck in their own end of the ice. So, you know, tip of the cap to Chicago. The Bruins are moving on. They changed the team substantially with some acquisitions, letting Tyler Seguin go. And on paper and so far on the ice when they've had all their parts, they've been a better team.
Jack, you mentioned the Tyler Seguin trade for Louis Erickson, and then Rich Peverly was also part of that trade. That was the big off-season move that Peter Chiarelli made. And we have to ask you about Louis Erickson because of the fact that he was knocked out with a concussion by John Scott, who was subsequently suspended for 7 games. It's a two-part question about Louis Erickson. How is he currently feeling after that dirty hit by John Scott? And when healthy, how is he fitting in on that top line of the Boston Bruins?
Most important, he's feeling pretty good. He's traveling with the team, even though it's a down-and-backer to the island for the Bruins. And he has begun to skate again. He's been cleared to skate. And if he continues to have good days, as we all know with concussions, it doesn't really take on any given pattern. But if he continues to have good days, he should be practicing with the team next week. When he's healthy, he is really good with Patrice Bergeron. And reads the game very, very well, plays extremely conscientiously in the back two-thirds of the ice, which, of course, is the key to Claude Julien's system. It's not that the Bruins don't play an attacking style of hockey because they can ring up a lot of goals when everybody's clicking, but it starts with the forwards providing back pressure on rushing opposing forwards so the defenseman can stand up at the blue line, and the opposing forwards like Sidney Crosby in the Eastern Conference Final last year, they run out of time and space. And Erickson does that exceptionally well. He's actually got some really good nasty to his game, plays a good brand of hockey. It's not dirty, but it's very hard to play against, and also has terrific vision and great stick skills. So he's a really nice complement to the team. Certainly not the incredible speed and high-end potential finishing ability that Tyler Seguin has, but a much more complete player at this stage in his career.
Jack, the other offseason acquisition saw Jerome McGinley finally become a member of the Bruins after the false start at last season's trade deadline. Given the disappointing playoff performance that McGinley put forth when he looked like a guy at the tail end of his career, are you surprised that he's gotten off to such a solid start in Boston?
Not at all. In fact, you know, taking nothing away from the great run in 2011 and what they've done during the Claude Julien era, In my opinion, the Pittsburgh series was Claude's finest hour. You know, you take the incredible talent on that Pittsburgh team, and McGinley was part of that incredible talent, and you hold it to 2 goals in 4 games, something's going on there. And what was going on there was the Bruins were playing the most suffocating defense ever seen. I mean, it's going to be a long, long time before we see that kind of firepower with that many MVPs in the same lineup, you know, not just the two guys who've won it, but also the number of times they have won it and are going to win it, and they're held to 2 goals in 4 games. And McGinley was just part of that train wreck for Pittsburgh. He was one of the guys who didn't have any time and space. But he has been everything the Bruins had hoped he would be. He got in a fight on opening night, and the crowd loved him immediately. He's the kind of guy who will defend any player wearing the same color sweater. Well, you guys know. I mean, you've been a lot closer to him than I have for years and years, and I openly had the man crush on him when he was playing for Calgary. He was born to wear black and gold as far as Bruins followers are concerned.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Jack Edwards. He's the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network. Jack, going back to the offseason trade, the Sagan trade that saw Louis Erickson come to Dallas, the only other piece of the trade who is currently playing for the Bruins is Riley Smith. Are you surprised he's been able to gain the trust of Claude Julien so early on in his tenure as a member of the Bruins?
You know, since the Eastern Conference teams didn't see the Western Conference teams last year until the Stanley Cup final, I really had no idea if this guy was a player or not. He's a player. He's really got some grit to his game. He makes creative passes. We've seen him make several indirect passes off the kick plate at the bottom of the boards that have been right on the money, like billiard shot passes. But again, it starts with defense. And if you want to get Claude's attention and you want to play minutes for him consistently, you're going to do the job in your own end of the ice. And that goes beyond just tasting guys along the boards. It means that as a wing, you win the puck battles, but then when you see your center in trouble, you get within 7 or 8 feet of him in a lane where he's got an easy pass to make. And Riley Smith is very, very good at reading what's going to happen that way. He's fit in extremely well. You get the feeling over the last 3 or 4 games that the performance is getting a little inconsistent, which you usually see from a guy who's only been around for a couple of years, 3 years, and he's probably going to hit some flat spots. But the Bruins have institutional depth that they have never had since Claude Julien was here, and obviously not since Chiarelli has arrived. And they were able to do things like seeing a third line that had gone a little bit flat. They called up Ryan Spooner from Providence a couple of nights ago, and Spooner was terrific in his debut, and everybody thinks he's going to be right back in the lineup again tonight against the Islanders.
Jack, I wanted to ask you about Milan Lucic. He's one of my favorite players. I know he's referenced a lot as kind of like the second coming of Cam Neely there. Maybe not as prolific of a goal scorer, but because he plays the game as kind of that prototypical power forward. But he's got 12 points in his first 12 games, and he's been a force on a night-in and night-out basis. And as you know, last year was kind of a difficult year for him in the lockdown shortened year. He was even a healthy scratch a few times there. What would you attribute the return of the old Milan Lucic to?
A lot of factors. One, he got married and became a father in quick order last fall. That was, in the fall of 2012. That changes everybody's priorities. It doesn't matter how much you tell yourself you're ready to become a parent, it changes your priorities in life. And he wasn't in very good shape when he showed up in January. He got off to a decent start, but nobody around the league was really in true game shape when they dropped the puck on the shortened season. Then it caught up with him. He went into a deep, long slump, did not play well, was not moving his feet. He finally got in shape late in the season, and he was tremendous in the playoffs. He was unforgettable in the back half of the third period of Game 7 against Toronto. He actually had one of those, like, hop on my back, I'll carry you boys moments where the whole team followed his lead. And he's taken that through the playoffs and right into the beginning of this season. He showed up in the best shape of his life for training camp. Maybe, you know, not openly saying it, but maybe thinking, hey, you know, maybe I can get on Team Canada and go to Sochi and represent my country in the Olympics. Everybody wonders if the guy's going to be mobile enough to play on the big ice surface. He's a lot faster than people think he is. He is really a fast guy. For somebody who carries the size that he carries, he scares people. You know, he really scares people. There's a clip out there on the internet of Nicholas Jalmerson in Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final, seeing Lucic barreling down the left wing, and he actually just flips the puck up the boards, producing a turnover, and scampers out of the way. And Jalmerson's a pretty tough guy. He's a pretty tough guy, but you see that 230 pounds wearing train number 17 on the front of the locomotive, you don't want to play on the tracks.
Earlier in October, the Bruins signed Dennis Seidenberg to a four-year, $16 million contract extension. At the time, Peter Chiarelli said that signing Seidenberg was one of the organization's top priorities. At the end of the contract, he'll be almost 37 years old. Given the physical style of play, did the Bruins have any hesitation in giving him a four-year deal, or does his chemistry with Chara make him too valuable to see walk away?
His chemistry with everybody makes him too valuable to let him walk away, and the feeling is that he takes such tremendous care of himself that he is not going to be one of these guys that suddenly just can't play. I think there's going to be a long warning light on Dennis Seidenberg, and my guess is that unless we have an unforeseen injury, he's going to be very strong at the end of this four-year contract. Also, if you think about it, Seidenberg being one of the most underrated players in the entire league and maybe the most underrated defenseman in the NHL, signing for $4 million a year is probably lower than his market rate. Mm-hmm. And it tells you that he's extraordinarily happy in Boston. He's found a system. He's found a home. He's found a city. He's found teammates that all make it work for him. And obviously it works for the team. And if you look at the way Chiarelli is building out, he and the Sagan trade, I think, in my opinion, is part of this. Sagan's going to be a prolific scorer in the NHL. He's going to retire with somewhere between 300 and 600 goals. Who knows? Just depends on systems and you know, injuries and how much he wants it. But he's going to score a ton. But he's not going to get there for a while, and he's not going to get there in Claude's system for even a longer time. So with Chara and Seidenberg in the window right now, where they're playing at their peak, for at least another two, maybe 3 years, right at the top of their ability to shut down opponents, you make the deal for an Erickson and a Riley Smith, who gives you a little bit more depth, but mostly for an Erickson, who's a much more finished player, in order to take advantage of that Stanley Cup championship window before Dougie Hamilton really ascends to what they hope he's going to ascend to, which is not a given. It's not an automatic, but if he progresses, if Hamilton progresses the way they hope, then that four-year contract to Seidenberg and the long-term deal that's still going to be running on Chara will have been worth it, so they can keep the window open until Hamilton makes the transition to being a number one defenseman in the NHL. And that way, they can reload instead of having to rebuild.
Jack, we'll let you go on this last question. Fans here in Winnipeg have adopted Anthony Peluso as a new fan favorite. Peluso says he tries to model his game after Boston Bruins winger Sean Thornton. For fans in Winnipeg who may not be as familiar with Thornton, what does he do for the Bruins that makes him so valuable to that organization?
I love him like a son. I really do. Sean Thornton has his priorities on and off the ice completely in line. He is dedicated to his team, his teammates, and his community. He understands the role that he plays on the team, never, ever complains about ice time, every once in a while takes a bad penalty and is truly remorseful for it. he gets it. He totally gets it. You know, Thornton is a guy whose grandfather worked in a steel mill in Oshawa, whose father worked in the steel mill in Oshawa. He worked in the steel mill in Oshawa. You know, yeah, those are weight room muscles, but they also started in the steel mill in Oshawa. The guy gets it. You know, he totally understands how fortunate he is to be playing hockey and how wonderful it is to have teammates who will have his back because he has their backs. And yes, I've seen Peluso play, and I'm totally on that page with you. And you want guys like that to do well and to be around for a long, long time because they're really special. They're really special people, and they remind you how fortunate all of us are no matter what our walks of life are.
Jack, that's really a great story, and I just wanted to mention it's a little known fact that Drew also worked in a steel factory in Winnipeg.
That's not the least
and
bit
that's
true.
That's why he is as ripped as the Hulk.
Jack Edwards is the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network. He's one of our favorites. Jack, thanks very much for doing this morning.
Always fun, boys. Thanks for having me.
Take care, Jack.
Thanks a lot, Jack.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly before 10 in the morning, welcome back to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Jack Edwards, the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network. Before him, big thank you to Mike Colligan for joining us. In case you missed either of those interviews, they will be available for download on iTunes. You can search and subscribe to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. They'll also be available on our website, illegalcurve.com, as well as on tsn1290.ca. Be sure to stay up to date with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and the midweek show, NHL Midweek. Programming note about midweek, Tuesday night this coming week, not Wednesday because the Jets play in Chicago on Wednesday. So Tuesday night, 6 p.m., it's NHL Midweek. So that's maybe early midweek?
Yes. Yeah. Pre-hump day.
Yeah, pre-hump day, NHL midweek this coming Tuesday here on TSN 1290. Gentlemen, at first we were going to, according to the show plan, that we were going to talk about the Steve Downey-Max Talbot trade between Philly and Colorado. Before we get to that trade, we have to discuss what happened last night in Philadelphia. Obviously the Flyers were just humiliated on home ice, 7-0 defeat. Then, rather than, you know, competing in the game or scoring a goal or, you know, doing something, they decided to goon it up, and the game dissolved into just brawl after brawl after brawl. Ray Emery committed an on-ice assault, as far as I'm concerned, on Braden Holtby. Holtby said to Emery, "I don't want to fight you." Emery said, "I don't care. We're fighting. You better just cover yourself up." And he absolutely beat the crap out of Braden Holtby while the referee sat back and watched it unfold in front of him. To me, that was beyond. I mean, I'm well on record saying I don't think that fighting needs to be in the game. I thought this went beyond the typical fighting discussion. I thought this was just as brutal as you're going to see on the sheet of ice.
I guess we saw the return of Razor Ray Emery, if you remember from his Ottawa days. He was in a couple of fights. I forget who he fought on Buffalo. It wasn't Ryan Miller. Maybe we can look that up. We'll get Remus
to
look that up.
He was fighting in the AHL. He was notorious for fighting all the time.
And we saw the return of that. Ray Emery is a loose cannon.
Remus says it was Martin Biron and Andrew Peters in Buffalo.
Right. Yeah, that's right. He fought Biron and Peters. So, yeah, that's right. Good call on Remus for digging that up. Yeah, he has a history of being a loose cannon, and he actually had some off-ice issues while he was with the Ottawa Senators. But last night, I mean, there's a couple of things about that game. I watched that game last night. The Philadelphia Flyers didn't even look like they were trying. It was really an embarrassing, poor effort by the Philadelphia Flyers, who, as you mentioned, made the trade with the Colorado Avalanche with Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh there, and they acquired Steve Downey. Steve Downey was in the lineup, and he was obviously largely ineffective, but they lost 7-0 at home. And this is a team that only has 3 wins this year, and they're playing a Washington Capitals team that's by no means one of the top teams in the NHL. They've got their own defensive deficiencies.
And they didn't have Ovechkin.
Dave, and you're losing 7-0. Now, I tweeted this out last night. I mean, at this point, is is Paul Holmgren's job on the line?
There were fire Holmgren chants last night in Philly.
And largely, Drew, those chants don't mean a lot in the grand scheme of things. But in this case, I mean, they're 3-9. I think they're 3-9. They've won three games.
They're 3-9.
I know that. So and Holmgren's made a coaching change already.
They've scored the fewest goals in the NHL. They've scored 20 goals in 12 games.
And I've you know already talked to you about this, Drew, off air. They're playing really poorly right now. But if you look at the talent that's on that team, there's a lot of talent there. And there's a lot of forwards that a team like the Jets would love to have on their team. And they can't buy a goal. And they can't defend. Mark Streit has looked awful. Kimmo Timonen is starting to show his age.
He's 100.
And he hasn't looked good. He was beat badly last night. And
not as badly as Braden Holtby was beaten.
Well,
but on Bum Ching.
Back to the brawl. I mean, that's a little bit ridiculous. In that situation, when a guy isn't protecting himself, I think Ray Emery needs to chill out a little bit. And I think a guy like Braden Holtby is not a guy that's been in a lot of fights. I don't know if he's been in a fight in the NHL, maybe in junior. But Ray Emery, that was a little bit... I'll put it this way, Dave. He took it a little bit too far. And that's a little bit unacceptable.
You know what? It's interesting. I mean, I watched parts of the game and I saw the highlights after the fact. And you know, it's funny. Downey actually had an impact on the game, I think like 19 seconds in. Hit a great chance in front. And then the game actually looked fairly even. In the first period, I mean...
Until the second period.
Backstrom didn't score the first goal until late in the first period for the Capitals. So, yep. I mean, it was a 1-0 game after one. So, I mean, it was by no means out of anybody's
hands. And
then
it was 6-0 after two.
Right. And you could tell that, obviously, they were losing it. And I counted. There were 17 penalties. Like various penalties called during that infraction. I mean, it was crazy. And you watch... And you're right. I mean, the reality is, if a guy doesn't want to fight, there's nothing wrong. Look, if you're a goalie... With all due respect to Ray Emery, you know, he's taken boxing lessons. Like, the guy likes to fight. I mean, that's fine. That's his thing. The truth is, if a guy doesn't want to fight you, that doesn't make him less of a man. I mean, he's not a fighter. No. I mean, that's just what he is. Goaltenders aren't fighters. You can ask Timmy. Timmy was a goaltender up until he was 10, if I recall correctly. Were you a fighter, Tim?
When you're 10?
Timmy's a lover, not a fighter.
No, but the point is that it's needless. Like, look, the reality is you want to send out your fighters to have a battle, and whether Drew likes it or not, that still happens, and that's fine. But like goaltenders fighting is so needless. And what's even worse, and I mean we haven't touched on it, they gave him the third star.
Right, yeah.
That's insane. Like, that's it. That's actually
crazy.
You
know what that is? That is the Philly beat writer in question. And, I mean, it was Frank Saravelli. He's the one who said publicly on Twitter that I'm the one who did it.
We've met Frank before.
We know Frank very well. He's trolling the audience with that.
I don't mind that.
I'm shocked that the Flyers organization would let that happen.
That's not the big deal. I want to get back to the on-ice product here in the game itself, the score. I don't know what has gone wrong in Philly. I think there's a lot of problems. Their defensive zone coverage has not been good. You have guys like Voracek and Simmons who have not maintained the level of play that they have over the last couple of years. I mean, Jakub Voracek in Winnipeg last year was the best player on the ice. This year he's 4 points in 13 games. He's been awful. And the fact that they're this bad, like it'd be one thing if they were losing games, you know, by a goal or two, but they're getting beaten down by teams at home. And this team looks out of sorts. I used the word discombobulated earlier. And they have fallen so hard, so quickly, that it's not good. Because when you're 9 games under .500 at this point in the season, it's really difficult to get back to where you need to be to get into the playoffs.
You know what? They might as well, in Philadelphia right now, given, you know, teams should be circling the Philadelphia organization and trying to pick the bones right now, because that is an absolute disaster going on there.
They'll be in Winnipeg in 2 weeks.
Yeah, they'll be here in November, and then we'll be in Philly at the end of the month. November 15th, the Flyers are here in Winnipeg, and then on Black Friday at 10:30 a.m. start in Winnipeg, the Jets will be in Philadelphia. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down. 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting, custom-made mouthguard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center is an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or check them out online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
I wonder if Les Rikus saw this earlier this week. I don't know if you guys saw this. Pascal Dupuis
pulled out his own tooth
on the bench.
Yeah.
That must have been painful.
It surprises me that the number of NHL players that don't wear mouth guards.
That's a good point. You know, that's maybe something we should have Les Rikus on to talk about.
We're going to have Les on in a couple weeks' time to talk about that.
Yeah, good.
Or talk about mouth protection and everything in terms of hockey and sports and everything else.
Yep.
But, I just don't get it.
You don't get it, Drew. And also, we haven't mentioned this whole issue of the skate guards now that are coming out. Because of the injuries that have happened with shots to the foot.
Yeah.
So we're now...
Well, Joffrey Lupul got in trouble in Toronto.
Joffrey Lupul. And for those people out there who haven't seen this, it's basically a piece of protective plastic that you put around your skate boot so that if you get a puck there, it doesn't hurt as much.
Doesn't break your foot.
Anyone who's played hockey knows that if you get a puck on the side of your foot,
it's really
painful. And to be honest with you, when I played, more so than beer league now, but when I played, community center hockey,
pre-ACL injury,
right, that didn't exist. And this is a thing. I'm trying to remember who the guy recently, Mark Giordano.
Yeah,
it was Mark Giordano.
Took
a puck in the foot. Mm-hmm. He's out for 2 months. So now, if you wear that piece of plastic, that could really save a guy's injury, save a guy's season. So you're in a situation now with the teeth and the mouth guards. I mean, it's not so uncomfortable it goes back to the visor debate, right, Drew? And you've always said this on the show. If it's gonna help you lose an eye.
No, help prevent you from losing an eye.
Sorry, that's what I meant. It's if it helps
you don't need help losing an eye. You just take a fork and stab yourself. You're going
to
be good.
If it helps to prevent an eye injury, you wear it. And that's why the NHL's grandfathered visors in. So it might be time for more guys to start wearing mouth guards.
I just don't understand for the life of me why you have a protective piece of equipment that all it's going to do is prevent you from getting injured. Or in the case of a visor, it's going to prevent you from suffering a catastrophic eye injury that could...
Catastrophic
eye injury that could prevent you from losing years off your career. And you don't wear it. It's just...
What happens in minor hockey?
You wear a visor.
Not only that, the cage, right?
And,
but if you don't have a neck guard on, that happened when Richie and I coached hockey 3 years ago. If you don't have a neck guard on, they make you go to the dressing room and put a neck guard on. Because if you're on the ice and you get a puck or you get a skate, you have to have a neck guard on.
That's my favorite trash talk in rec league. If you're trash talking in rec league, first of all, you probably have an initial problem you have to deal with. But then second of all, the guy will be like, take your bird cage off and say that or something along those lines. I'm like, I'm playing rec league hockey. I'd like to keep my teeth in my mouth and I like to keep my eyes, where they are in my skull so that I don't have to, change my entire life because I, took a high stick in rec league hockey.
You don't become the elephant man.
Well, not at least because of rec league hockey. If there's other reasons to become the elephant man, that's a separate issue altogether. What are we doing in this segment? NHL, let's talk about the Downey-Talbot trade. We didn't talk about it last segment.
Okay.
Steve Downey traded to Philadelphia. He's now going to be out for a while because his face got absolutely destroyed by Aaron Volpatti last night.
Yep.
That's the irony of the situation is that, the Caps won the game and they win the war because, the Flyers who just acquired Steve Downey are going to be without him for a while. That was a solid punch from Aaron Volpatti.
Yeah, he took a big punch from Volpatti, a fighter. And what's a little bit... surprising about that is that Downey has changed his game, and he's still a guy that goes in there and finishes his checks, but he's kind of fought less, and he's stayed away from kind of that dirty stuff that kind of plagued him earlier on in his career. And we all know that he was drafted by the Flyers in the first round back in, I think it was 2005, with the Flyers, and then that was when they, back in the days when they had Mike Richards and Jeff Carter and that group of players, and he kind of came along, and then he went to Tampa, and then he had problems with injuries last year, only played one game. And it's funny because I mentioned him on NHL Midweek. I think he's been excellent. He had a goal and six assists for the Avalanche, and he was playing really well, playing a little bit with Nathan MacKinnon. And, you know, for me, it was a trade that I really liked it for the Flyers, actually.
And I like it better for the Avs.
Well, if it's straight up players, Downey's a better player, but I guess you like the contract, the fact that, yeah, and I agree with that.
Downey's a UFA.
Right. He only has 1 year left, and then Talbot's under contract for a low price, $1.5 million or whatever.
Two more years after this season. The cap hit is 1.75.
Right.
His actual salary is less than that. Cap hit is more than his salary.
And to be honest with you, Drew, you know, Patrick Waugh said this, and people forget that Patrick Waugh actually has some managerial responsibilities. And he actually was the one that announced the trade for the Avalanche, and he said that they liked him and they acquired him, meaning that they kind of initiated this trade because they want, with Talbot, you're getting a guy that's won a Stanley Cup. He has all that experience with Pittsburgh. He's a little bit older than Downey, and he's got a little bit of a different style of a game. He can kill some penalties. He's not going to score a lot. Talbot's a guy that if he gets 5 to 10 goals, you're pretty happy with that.
Well, sure. If you're the Avs and you trade Downey, you don't mind giving up the offense that Downey brings to the table, because if there's anything the Avs have, it's a fair bit of offense.
And to be honest with you, Drew, Downey is probably a guy that as a UFA makes $3, $4 million a year.
Sure. You're not going to bring him back probably because he doesn't fit in with your team long term because you have so much offense.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And that's why it's long term. It's probably an okay trade for Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh, but... Well, I think Downey's the better player, and that, to be honest with you, that's exactly what the Philadelphia Flyers need. Now, in his first game, they get axed 7-0,
and he gets punched in the face so hard that he's going to be out for a while.
So it's not off to a good start, but it's one of those trades.
I can understand it from both sides. I understand it from Philly because they think, you know, he's had some very good success here in Philly, and he can give our offense, which is struggling, a boost.
Right.
But I can also understand it from Colorado's perspective, because what they might be losing in the short term in terms of offense, or, you know, Steve Downey's probably more talented than Max Talbot. What they get from Talbot is they get some veteran leadership.
Yep.
They get a guy who's won the cup.
Yep.
They get some very good defensive responsibility. Yep. And they get cost certainty. They know that Max Talbot's going to make, you know, going to cost them $1.75 million a year in the salary cap for the next 2 years, whereas Steve Downey probably wasn't going to be here after this year. And if he was here, he was going to cost us a lot more.
Right. You get a guy, you know a little bit more than you know about him than with Steve Downey. Steve Downey, you know, is going to give you more goal scoring, and he's going to give you grit and energy. But with Talbot, that's a guy you're getting for the playoffs, because the Avalanche are most likely a playoff team this year. Obviously, there's a lot of time to go here. But he's a guy that, you know, he'll stick up for his teammates. He's a role player. He's versatile. And, you know, it's more of a long-term move.
Adrian Dater, in his column in the Denver Post, wrote, "I sense that Patrick Waugh was growing a bit uneasy with Downey's temper and occasional bad penalties." So, I mean, it's clear that, you know, Waugh wanted something that Downey wasn't providing, and he was, you know, a little too ballistic, which is, of course, ironic considering that Patrick Waugh was known sometimes for his volatility.
Yeah, but you got a young dressing room that can probably be, it can probably, if you have a bad influence in a young dressing room, I think the impact is a lot more than a bad influence. And I'm not saying Steve Downey was a bad influence, but I'm saying he's a guy who's a little bit more unpredictable, and he's a little bit more of a loose cannon. And, you know, what is he really bringing to the table that's so irreplaceable? And the truth is nothing, because you got so much offensive firepower anyways on that team.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned the words ballistic loose cannon. Assistant General Manager Ron Hextall probably welcomes that in Philly.
I got to tell you, Philly's got so many problems right now. I mean, you can look at that team and, you know, they're so insular, and they always hire the guys that they're familiar with. That's a team, to me, that is desperately calling out for a outside voice, somebody to come in there and just shake things up and to give a new... You know, if you're always surrounded by the same people who have the same philosophy, they're never going to say that your philosophy's wrong, because they believe that philosophy also.
So you're saying they're sycophants, or you're just saying that it's something they subscribe to?
Not sycophants, because a sycophant to me is a yes man.
Isn't it sycophant?
No, it's sycophant. there's a sycophant to me is a yes man who says, yes, good idea. What you're doing is perfect,
like
all
Remus,
the time.
Remus.
Yeah, Remus is a sycophant. but to me, you know, what Philly needs is somebody, an outside voice, to come in and say, look at what your organization is. you know, look in the mirror, truly look at what you guys are. You have all this talent, but you can't score more than a goal a game or a goal and a half a game. Great, you beat up a goaltender in a fight, but what did that actually do in terms of the scoreboard? It did nothing. Your best player is regressing before your very eyes. That's Claude Giroux, and I don't think anybody can argue that he's regressing. They need to do something in Philly where, because for whatever reason, I mean, they're just not cutting it anymore. If I'm an NHL general manager, I'm calling up Paul Holmgren and I'm saying, you know, what is Jakub Voracek? You know, I don't think he's fitting in anymore. Maybe Wayne Simmonds isn't the player that you guys thought he was with Mike Richards. I tend to think that both those guys are pretty good players, but desperate times call for desperate measures. And to me, if they're not desperate in Philly after last night, I don't know when they're going to be.
I think it's a pretty clear indication that Scott Hartle should never have shaved his head and got rid of the locks, because since he has, the Philly hasn't been the same. And Drew,
that was a day ago.
I know, I'm kidding. So, but it's clear that they need to make some changes.
I thought you were serious, Dave.
Thank you, Ezra.
Yeah, figures, you guys. The loving continues here.
No, but like just quickly here, like the Philadelphia Flyers with Claude Giroux and Scotty Hartnell and Wayne Simmonds. We mentioned Voracek. Braden Schenn's still a young, talented player. I mean, there's like Matt Reed was good for over the last couple of years, came in out of Bemidji State. They've got a lot of Sean Couturier, and then you go to the and Le Cavalier. I mean, they're not this bad.
They are, Izzy. I agree with you, but they are this bad. They've been this bad for 2 years now.
Well, they weren't this bad last year.
They were pretty damn bad. Look where they finished last year.
No, they weren't that far out of the playoffs last year.
Oh, go look again, my friend. Go look at the standings.
They weren't last place.
They weren't in last place, but they were not a good team last year by any stretch of the imagination.
They were like 5 points out of the playoffs last year, weren't they?
I don't think so. Philadelphia, well, I mean, yeah, they were 6 points out.
But 6 points.
They finished.
Oh, who's right?
They were bad last year. They were 10th spot. They couldn't score last year either.
Well, right now they're way worse than they were last year.
Right. So would you argue that they're not regressing then?
No, they're regressing, but what I'm saying is like, last year, you had problems at net, right?
No,
that was a huge.
You didn't, though.
That was a huge. What are you talking about?
Their numbers.
Why did they buy out Brizgalov?
Because
then?
He was making too much money. But look at his numbers.
He was making too much money for how he was playing.
No, but look at his numbers. They weren't terrible. Last year, the problem in Philadelphia was the goal scoring. They couldn't score the goal score in Philly last year. It's the same
problem
this year.
Voracek could score last year. Giroux could score last year.
Look at the numbers.
Matt Reed could score last year.
Look at the numbers.
Well, right. I just said that they were 5 points out of the playoff spot, and you said they were way behind.
Well, I'm telling you, they only scored 133 goals last year, and they only gave up 141. Their numbers were not terrible in terms of goals against last year. People think that's the case, but it's more of a fallacy, I think, than anything else. Their biggest problem the last 2 years has been an inability to put the puck in the net on a consistent
basis.
It's
way worse than it is this year than it was last year.
Fine, yes. But it's not like last year that Brizgalov was horrendous and his numbers were giving up 5 goals a game.
He wasn't good last year.
He wasn't great, but he wasn't terrible.
At times he was.
Well, I mean,
he was bought out.
No, he was bought out because his contract was too big more than
but
anything.
But if he was playing well, then you would pay him that money.
You know what? I think...
Well, why wouldn't the Canucks buy Luongo out then?
Silence.
Because I think it's a different situation, but whatever. We'll leave it there. You didn't, don't look so high and mighty over there.
I'm never high and mighty. I'm low. I'm low and calm.
Dirty. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Twenty minutes after 10 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290.
Sabbath, right? Not Sabbath? Who's this? Jethro? Okay. Sounded a little bit Black Sabbath-ish.
Well, as it is the Sabbath, so you weren't wrong.
Yeah. Nice.
Oh, I like it. Timmy played Led Zeppelin before. We got to play more kind of that. Era and
well, Richard's not here to make irrational music demands. Richard Pollock is not here, so he's usually the one who demands certain things on the music selection. So Timmy's got a little more free reign today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Still to come on the program in about 10 minutes' time, Scott Powers from ESPNChicago.com is going to join us.
Yep.
Quick update before we head on to a new topic. Steve Downey is still in a Pennsylvania hospital as of about 1 hour ago. That coming from Frank Saravelli. No comments so far from the Flyers, but he obviously got his face punched in pretty well, as we discussed. So we wish our best to Steve Downey, and hopefully he'll recover quickly. But
yeah, he'll be all right. He's a tough guy.
He's in the hospital. He might, you know, it's not like he's napping at home and he's going to be all right.
I'm just saying, he'll be fine.
And Bob McKenzie, TSN Hockey Insider, reporting that Vinny LeCavalier will be sidelined at least a couple of weeks, injured in the fight last night. So, you know, it goes from bad to worse for the Philadelphia Flyers and Vinny LeCavalier, who's been injured a few times. Who's been injured a few times this year so far. Of course, I have him in the hockey pool. It's just typical.
Well, this is the injury ninja, right?
Injury ninja?
Well, I mean, like, the injury ninja comes out when there's all these injuries. There have been so many injuries here. Look at the Winnipeg Jets, and it's a lot of them are not preventable. But certain teams are struggling with more injuries than others. The Habs are one of those teams, and...
Dave, do you have any idea what Ezzy's talking about with the injury ninja comment?
I'm not sure. I was thinking that it was something that there was some new hockey term.
Well, no. I mean, the injury ninja is like when, you know, a rash of injuries happen. It's like the injury ninja's around causing injuries.
Maybe you should just stop saying.
I think the injury ninja's like the Tooth Fairy and like some ethereal presence that just kind of hovers
Isn't
around
that
a
ethereal?
Hockey. Nah, same difference.
Or is it ethereal? You know what? Dave brings that expanded vocabulary to the show, and he's pulling out words like sycophant and sycophant or whatever. I know what it means, but it's only something you usually see in the big newspapers like the New York Times.
Henrik and Daniel Sedin. They're going to be Vancouver Canucks for life. They signed a four-year, $28 million contract extension yesterday, matching contracts, $7 million per season for each of them. They'll be 38 years old at the end of the contracts. $7 million a year for the Sedin twins, sound about right?
I think they get more, Drew, on the open market.
I would agree with you there.
And I really like this contract. Mike Gillis signs the Sedins, who have only played with one team their entire NHL careers after, you know, they were traded at the draft from the Islanders, who had those picks. This is a good contract because this essentially means that the Sedins will end their career in Vancouver. They might play a couple years after, but most likely this is their last, this is for sure probably their last four-year contract. I'd be surprised if they got a four-year contract at 38 years old. But again, some guys play longer. But this makes sense because the Sedins have been so consistent and part of this Vancouver Canucks team for a long time. And the Sedins here, I know we've talked about this a little bit on the show before. A lot of people think maybe the window for the Vancouver Canucks to win the Stanley Cup is gone. I don't know if it's necessarily gone. I think it's closing, and I don't think that they're maybe a Stanley Cup contender for me at this point, but I think if you look at the team as it's constructed right now, you've still got a lot of talent there. Sure, there's a hole at second line center, and David Booth hasn't worked out, but you've got some picks that I really like, Bo Horvat, Hunter Shinkaruk. They've put Ryan Kessler on the line with the Sedins, which I really like, but just sticking to the Sedins here, Dave. Henrik Sedin, we know he played 500 straight games. He's never injured. They're dependable. They're dynamic. They lead the Vancouver offense. And that's why you want to keep these guys on the team for the next 4 years and not let anybody else get them.
This was a marriage of two parties that wanted to be together. I mean, there's no question. The only question was term, really, because you had, I think from what I read, it was one side proposed 3 years, the other side proposed five. So they met in the middle and said 4 years. Again, there's the no movement clause because, not surprisingly, you know, the Sedins don't want to be traded. And realistically, you're looking at, I think, kind of like a hometown discount because, as Ed said earlier, there's no question they could have had more money on the open market. And I think so taking $7 million a season is fair for those guys.
Yeah, I mean, reports had that the Canucks wanted to come in at 3 years to start, right. and the Twins wanted 5 years to start. And then, you know, they settled at four. And then at that point in time, I mean, I think the money was pretty self-explanatory.
Just to add one thing, it means a lot more when you know that these guys are dependable and have had less injury problems than other players. Daniel Sedin's been pretty dependable, but if you look at Henrik Sedin, we know I think it was last year that he broke his Iron Man streak, wasn't it? Or 2 years ago?
Something like
that.
He
played 500 games in a row. Those guys, the style of play is not, it's not like, you know, we were talking about Milan Lucic with Jack Edwards. Those guys aren't power forwards. No. So you know that you're most likely going to get full seasons for the next 4 years.
Well, here's an interesting quote from John Tortorella yesterday when the announcement came out about the Sedins signing the big deal. You know, the Sedins, for better or worse, have the reputation as being soft players. You know, easy to play against, want to shy away from the physicality. This is John Tortorella. Our league is so Neanderthal in their thinking that it sticks, as in the reputation sticks of them being soft players. It pisses me off. When John Tortorella is not picking pointless fights with the media and not being a jerk for no very good reason, he is one of the most entertaining quotes in the game of hockey.
He sticks up for his players, Dave.
The truth is, I don't have a problem with his statement. I actually think his statement is 100% correct. I think that the reality is that these guys play the game. They play, they have exceptional skill. They have the longevity. They don't go out with injuries. They don't take needless penalties. I mean, you really can't ask for more from the players. I mean,
right.
So it is ridiculous when these guys, because they don't fight? Like, look, I'm not saying that fighting needs to be completely removed from hockey, but I also don't think that every player needs to be a fighter.
Right.
I don't think your skill players need to be, the reality is their skill. That's the reason. They're not called skill and brawn. Yeah, you sometimes will get a player who has a mix of the two, but the truth is they're generally not that elite. Like Jonathan Toews, as far as I'm aware, doesn't fight in very often. I mean, and he doesn't get called. Now, he plays a bit more of a grinding game.
Yeah, he's more physical than the Sedins are.
Right, but at the same time, he's not a fighter. And maybe it's because maybe they're not calling him soft because of the fighter. Maybe they're saying they're more peripheral players. I don't know what the exact, what their exact meaning of soft is, because there's different connotations. But to me, I think that Tortorella is right. I think he has a right, valid point of being pissed off, because it's a ridiculous mindset.
And more importantly, he's got Ryan Kessler on that line, who's a natural center, and he's playing right wing with Henrik Sedin obviously playing center and Daniel on the left. And that line has, I don't know if you guys have been watching the Canucks, but that line has been dynamite. It's one of the best lines in hockey right now. And I think he's got something. And the Sedins, by the way, have been playing more this year. Tortorella likes to play his top players more.
Ride your horses.
He's been playing on the Sedins have been playing on the penalty kill. I think the Canucks are absolutely a playoff team, and I don't think you should write them off winning a series or two this year.
I would agree with you. I don't love them, and I don't think that they're going to represent the West. I just don't think that their depth is there in their forward lines now. But I think that they are. I think they're not going to melt down like we've seen the last couple of years. I think that if they stay healthy and everything else, they're going to be there at least in the first or second round.
As
of
long
the
as they don't play the San Jose Sharks in the first round, they'll be okay.
Well, yeah, but because the San Jose Sharks look like a juggernaut
They swept them last year.
Well, exactly right. But I mean, that team melted down as well, I think. I mean, even if they played the Sharks this year, I don't think that they would get swept again. I think year that they were mentally a lot more fragile than anything else. Before we go to break and bring in Scott Powers of ESPNChicago.com, one tweet and one email in regards to the injury ninja. At D. Truffled on Twitter tweets at Illegal Curve and says, when not roaming the halls of NHL arenas, the injury ninja can be found hanging out with the sleeve gremlin. So that's also a mystical force. And Raccoon Carney here from the station says, the beer buzz is what haunts Ezzy on weekend mornings, a la the injury ninja.
What, Rack is on Twitter?
No, that was via email.
Oh, okay. For a second, I was going to say, I should be following Rack. He's right.
You've touched a nerve with your injury ninja comments.
Yeah.
We'll ask Scott Powers about that from ESPNChicago.com coming up. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past 10:30 in the morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Manouk. Producer Remus is on the other side of the glass, and producer Timmy gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He covers the Chicago Blackhawks for ESPNChicago.com. Scott Powers. Scott, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. How about yourself?
Doing well.
That's good. Scott, we got to start with the Blackhawks and their recent offensive explosion, averaging nearly 5 goals per game over the last 4 games. What has been the major reason for this boost in offense?
I think it was just something that was coming. You know, I think throughout the early parts of the season, they're actually getting a lot of shots on net, creating a lot of chances, but just not capitalizing. Guys like Patrick Sharp, who I think was leading the team in shots on goal, but it had one goal to show for it. And obviously Sharp, throughout his career, has been a pretty good shooter and, you know, around 10-12% shooting percentage. I think it was at about 2. So a lot of guys just looking to get off and you know, guys Sharp and Holst are starting to click a little bit. And the Blackhawks' power play has been pretty consistent this season, and that's something they didn't have last season. So I think that's also kind of accounted for some more goals recently where that's continued to kind of to keep pace. But you know, guys like Brandon Saad have also taken strides this year, and they've improved. I think, you know, even now Taves just gets going, and it seems like things are starting to click for them offensively where they weren't maybe so much early in the year.
You know, Scott, we are contractually obligated to ask you about Winnipeg's own Jonathan Taves, aka Captain Serious, who will play in front of family and friends. You wrote about him for ESPN Chicago yesterday. But just tell us, what kind of reception are you expecting the fans to give him?
Yeah, I mean, from talking to, you know, I made some phone calls to Winnipeg throughout this week, and everyone seems excited. Obviously, you guys know this better than I do, but you know, I guess he was kind of questionable what sort of return, but I think he knows that it's going to be a favorable one, and you know, people are likely going to get after Kane and some of the other guys. He actually kind of laughed when he thought about the idea of all the Winnipeg fans yelling at Kane and chanting after him. So they kind of have that fun relationship, but it's fun talking to, you know, people who know him as a child, and you know, I talked to one of his youth coaches, and just you know, how he's obviously created that nickname Captain Serious, but he remembers him as a 6-7-year-old child where they go to Jets games, and while all the other children were looking at everything else in the arena, you know, and Jonathan Taves was fixed on the game, and he couldn't get a smile out of him, so he kind of showed traits of that personality even as a child. So, I think he's really excited. You know, he got a chance to play in a preseason game back in 2010, and that was neat for him, but he obviously thought this would be something, you know, even more unique with just him growing up as a Jets fan and getting to play in front of that crowd.
Scott, Corey Crawford seems to have picked up right where he left off last year in the playoffs for the Chicago Blackhawks. Do you think he's more motivated this year by the chance to represent Canada at the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia?
I think that's part of the factor. There was sort of the belief that he sort of just turned the corner last year, too, where you know, he began approaching games differently. You know, his focus was at a different level. You know, he stopped playing you know, with the soccer ball before the games and started really focusing in on it. And he wasn't – his mentality before is where, you know, he gave up a soft goal or any kind of goal that he'd kind of be taken out of the game. And last season he was able to bounce back from that. And it seems like his consistency level was just somewhere where it was in his first few years in the league. And he seems like he's able to keep that this year where, you know, he's had a couple tough games but bounced back from those and pretty much, you know, been only giving up one or two goals a game. And but I'm sure that, you know, that kid of playing for Canada and, you know, obviously impressing the coaches and the people making that decision now is, I guess it's got to be somewhere in his head as well that, you know, I think he's had, you know, just a little bit over two goals against the average, and the save percentage has been pretty good. And he really hasn't given up many soft goals. I think a lot of the opportunities have been, the Blackhawks have struggled on the penalty kill and a lot of, you know, odd man rushes where he's been beat. So, overall, he's been pretty good, and you know, he hasn't talked a whole lot about Canada, but I believe it has to be somewhere in his head throughout the season.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Scott Powers. He covers the Chicago Blackhawks for ESPNChicago.com. Scott, you know, after last year's Stanley Cup winning season, you know, at least the last couple times the Blackhawks have won the Cup, they've had to go through and make some changes, especially to the forward group. This past year, the Blackhawks defense is still the same as it was last year. For Hawks general manager Stan Bowman, is this a case for the defense where if it ain't broke, don't fix it? Or can you see him making a move to acquire another piece on the back end?
Yeah, I doubt at this point that they would make any moves outside the organization. They have, you know, even some guys, you know, they allowed someone like Ryan Stanton to go on waivers, and Vancouver scooped him up and obviously kind of inserted him into their lineup. And there's a couple of the other guys in their AHL affiliate that they're kind of on the verge. So I think making moves for signing like a guy like Mike Koska and then even Theo Peckham, who played for Edmonton, You know, having guys like that that, you know, have some initial experience, I think they have some depth there, and they obviously, you know, they're still holding holding with seven, and with Koskinen had been eight defensemen. So, you know, guys like Brookbank and Roosevelt and Koskinen rotating. And so I think they feel like there's a lot of depth there, and I think, you know, those first five with Letty and Keith and Seabrook and Aduya and Jarmelson, I think those five are pretty consistent and guys are going to stick in the lineup. And then you have, you know, a few guys where they're going to rotate, and then even some depth there in organizationally in the minors. So it looks like the Blackhawks are pretty set defensively. The one concern for them so far has been finding someone to replace Michael Ferlie, which I think they found at least the thought process was he's going to be expendable and replaceable. Especially he was such a key piece on their penalty kill last year, and I thought they'd be able to find someone, and they haven't. The penalty kill really hasn't picked up where it's been last year, and they've been looking for a number of guys, and they've used a number of guys to fit for Leek's role, and no one's fit that bill yet.
Well, you know, Scott, that leads into my question, which is the penalty kill in Chicago, because you guys went from first to worst at currently at 72.5%. Is it simply that Michael Frolik was that integral to the PK unit, or is there a bigger problem in your opinion?
I think the big piece has been Frolik. I mean, the rest of the lineup, at least on the PK units, have been the same as they were last year. And when you look at who's giving up the goals, it's often when Marcus Kruger's on the ice, and he was the one that was paired with for a league. And Kruger doesn't look anywhere, you know, it doesn't look like he's lost a step or something's really been affected in his game, but there's been a lot of turnover and a lot of rotation in that secondary forward spot, you know, in the top unit. And they tried Joakim Nordstrom, who was a rookie they brought, you know, made the team out of training camp, and he struggled there. And then Michael Hanzus was better there, but Hanzus is hurt now. And they tried Brad Mills, who they just called up from the AHL, and he's hurt now. And you know, Brandon Saad's got his shots, and you know, Ferlik just had an interesting skill set where he was, you know, he was quick and he had some speed, and he got the stick on the puck, and you know, I often created offense the other way, and they just haven't found a guy. And then it was unique too, because I think Ferlik was, you know, that was his primary role. He was obviously fourth line wing, but he, you know, his big role was in the PK, and he really embraced it. So there were a lot of factors that worked with him and Kruger, and they become, you know, such a dominant pair last year, and really led to, you know, the Blackhawks having such a great season, because they played so many one-goal games, and was often a penalty kill that, you know, that helped them decide those. So I think it's a real concern for them going forward. You know, you would think there would maybe be some drop-off without for a league, but to go from, you know, top of the league to the bottom of the league, it's pretty drastic. So I think going forward, that may be one of the Blackhawks' biggest concerns.
You're listening to TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Scott Powers. He covers the Chicago Blackhawks for ESPNChicago.com.
Scott, you mentioned Brandon Saad, and he's a player that I really like. He's got lots of speed, and he scored 10 goals last year in his rookie season. He's been used in a variety of roles and positions, second-line center, on the third line, and now he's on the right wing playing with Patrick Kane there. What role do you think he's best suited for on this team, and maybe what do you think his ceiling is with the Blackhawks?
Yeah, they really tried to fit him in as a second-line center, because I think, one, they were missing that position. You know, Dave Bolin had been that guy, and he really wasn't that consistent there either. But they had a couple options, and I think the thought process was with Brian Bickle, you know, you're going to pay him so much money that you want to make him a top-six forward, and, you know, Bickle had been playing mostly third-line last season until the playoffs. And this way you could bring Saad into that top six, and hopefully he fits in there. But, you know, it just really wasn't. He'd never played there throughout his career, and, you know, just never grasped it quick enough for them. So, you know, they put him on the third line to start the season, and he had a pretty good start, and Bickle struggled, so they move him back up to the top, and he's kind of shifted between those first two lines. But it seems like he's clicking on that second line. You know, Patrick Kane obviously brings his skill, and then they've added Brandon Perry, who led the AHL in scoring last year, and he was sort of the guy they thought would be that second line center in the training camp, and got hurt, and now he's inserted, and he's really been an offensive spark. So, you know, Saad's shown things even in this last week. You know, against Minnesota, he just had some terrific plays where he kind of had a spin 180 pass to Kane, and another one where he kind of, you know, kind of weaved the puck through traffic and went to the net and had a nice, pretty goal. And it seems like he's a lot more consistent. I think that even last year, as good as he was at times, there were games where you wouldn't see him on the stat sheet, and he would kind of go missing. And this year, he's a lot more present, and he seems more assertive too. I think there's some confidence from last year he started the year, he wasn't thought to even make the team. You know, he was a healthy scratch the first game and got a chance because Carcillo got hurt. So he just seems to be more mature. I mean, it's a kid that just turned 21 last week, and I think he's having more confidence in himself and being able to do that consistently. So I think the Blackhawks, I think they have another top six player who can be consistently that. And you had a guy like Teuvo Teravainen who's going to come up. And they got some really good young stars that eventually, maybe if they want to start moving some of the older guys out or transitioning, I think they have some players that can really step in and be that force down the road.
Scott, obviously everybody's focused on Jonathan Toews playing in Winnipeg today, but there's also another player on the Blackhawks who was once quite beloved by fans here in Winnipeg returning, and that's Blackhawks backup goaltender Nikolai Habibulin. Obviously, he started his career here in Winnipeg, oh God, about 17, 18 years ago at this point in time.
Yeah.
He's been pretty bad for the Blackhawks the last couple of games as their backup goalie. I believe giving up 4 goals and 5 goals respectively in the last couple of games in which he started. Do you think that Nikolai Habibulin is going to end the season as the backup goaltender in Chicago?
No, I don't foresee that happening. It's I think the Blackhawks would like to get some quality starts out of him still, and they obviously paid, I think it was about $1.7 million for him, and I'm really hoping that he would be the backup for the Crawford for a while. But they have a guy, Antti Raanta, who's in the AHL, and they signed from Finland last year, and he was a really – I think he was the regular season and playoff MVP in Finland last year and really has some potential. The hope was to transition him. You know, he hadn't played North American hockey before, and to get him in the minors in Rockford and, kind of get him accustomed to that and get ready. And I think later on in the season, bring him up. But Habibulin's struggles may move up that process. He's really, the last two games, he looked good at times and had some amazing saves that you kind of expect out of him, but then he's given up some soft goals, and once the floodgates open, it's just it's been downhill. So I don't know. It's hard to pinpoint if they're going to get him. He really doesn't have that confidence, and he talked about the other day not being able to probably gain that confidence unless he's playing in games, and I'm not sure if Quinville really trusts him right now. I think I think Crawford may even play in a back-to-back this weekend with today's game being a little bit earlier. So it'll be interesting because I think Habibulin maybe gets at least one more start to prove himself. But if it's another performance like he's had the last 2 days, I think the Blackhawks' hand might be forced and they may have to go to the younger kid sooner than they hope.
Scott, we've got one last question for you here, and then we're going to let you go. It's a bit of a fun question for you. Yesterday on ESPNChicago.com, you reported that 4 Blackhawks will be growing mustaches throughout November and in support of November, and Dave and I are going to be doing that for November. Drew did it last year, but he decided that he likes his beard better. But we're going to be participating with the Winnipeg Jets again this year. So you reported that the 4 players that are going to be participating are going to be Brian Bickell, Brandon Bolig, Patrick Kane, and Nicholas Jarmelson. And my question for you is, who do you think is going to grow the best mustache?
How's it going? Kane's usually struggled to grow facial hair, so, and he's often going with that mullet in the playoffs. So I'm curious to see what he can do. I don't know. There's some good guys in there. I'm going to go with Bolig. If I recall, I think he had a pretty good beard and mustache going last season. So I'll go with Bolig, and I think Kane will grow the worst one out of the 4.
Are you doing a mustache, Scott?
I am not. I also cannot grow a great mustache, although I think my wife would like that. Maybe next year. I completely forget about it. So maybe next year, if I get reminded, maybe I'll go through November as well.
It's a good program. Scott Powers from ESPNChicago.com. Thanks very much for joining us today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
All right, take care.
Take care, Scott. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Wow. one final segment of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday morning. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors, Ron Jossel is in town. You can get tickets for Ron at RumorsComedyClub.com. If you're looking for a place to hold your Christmas party, you can also check out RumorsComedyClub.com, the best place to host your company Christmas party. Before we get to rapid fire and cheers and jeers, usually Escapades would take up this segment, but as he's been behaving lately, he's not really providing much in terms
staying
of
staying home on Friday nights.
Yeah. I mean, you had two McChickens last night at 10 o'clock at night, but that's just the...
But hold on. They were Bistro McChickens.
Touché.
Classy.
Dave, you have a Remuscapade, though.
You know what? I received a phone call to my house late last night, and it was from an unknown number. Generally, I wouldn't answer them, but you know, I figured, okay, why not? So answer the phone. Hi, unknown voice says, and it's like, hi, Dave, and it's like, hello. I'm like... He goes, hi, it's Remo. I'm like, oh, hey, Remo, what's up? And he goes, I'm locked in Snap Fitness on Taylor, a little place that I co-own.
Yeah. You got to tell people that you're
Sorry,
the co-owner.
Co-owner
there,
of Snap Fitness on Taylor. Yeah. Good gym. Get down there. The Illegal Curve crew works out there.
Yeah.
And Remus goes, I'm in a towel. I've locked all my stuff in the locker. I can't do it. I can't get out. I've got my key, my phone, my wallet, my clothes. What am I going to do?
Okay, so hold on, Remus. Let's get Remus in here. So you went for a workout, and then after your workout, you realized that you had locked the key inside of the locker.
No, I went for the workout, and I have a padlock there, and I keep the key to my padlock on my car keychain. I keep my car keys separate from my house keys. That's a different story for a different day. So I went, I took a shower because I don't want to drive home in my sweaty clothes. It's pretty gross. So I go shower, I get out, and I look around, and I'm like, oh, crap. I lock my key in my locker, and I'm like looking around. I'm alone in the bathroom. What do I do? Do I walk out in the middle of the workout room in a towel and no shoes? I don't know.
So how did you call? Did you call Dave from your cell phone inside of the locker
room? That's what I'm trying to figure out. How did you call Dave?
Obviously, I don't. Sorry, no offense to you, Dave, but I don't remember your number off by heart.
Most people don't remember numbers in this day and age.
No one remembers numbers. The one number I do know off by heart because I remember this number from years is your cousin Adam. So the guy beside me was changing, and I said, "Oh, excuse me, sorry, I'm locked out of the locker. Can I please use your phone?" And he goes, very nice guy. His name was John. And he says, yeah, no problem, man. I've done this before. Everyone does it. So I phoned out your cousin Adam, and they gave me your number. And then you're like, it's Friday. I don't drive on Fridays.
I don't roll on the Shabbos.
Yeah, I can't help you.
I never even considered that
and then
part
you,
of it.
But then you go, Remo, I'll talk to you later. Call me if you need help. I'm like, Dave, this is me calling you for help right now.
So then I called our manager, and who was still there working diligently, Kayla, and she brought the bolt cutters with Remus in a towel and opened the lock.
I actually did it while in a towel. There's a picture of me. There might be a picture of me doing
you,
it.
You snipped the
I did
the
it with the help of John.
Now, more importantly, the best part of this – well, there's a number of best parts.
Yeah, there's a lot of best parts.
John recognized Remus's voice from TSN.
He goes, I'm talking to Dave and Adam, and he's like – He goes, hey, are you a Remus from TSN 1290?
Reem, did you sign the bolt cutters and give them to him?
Oh, my God. He goes, who's going to give it to you worse on the air? I'm just like, great, thank you.
That's unbelievable. I think it's absolutely hilarious that you called Dave and...
Who was I supposed to call?
No, it's hilarious. I think it's good stuff, Reem. It does happen to everybody. Everyone, you know, locks their keys or forgets things.
I was in a towel.
Yeah.
Wasn't fun. I mean, honestly, it was a 5 minute.
Did the shower did it wear off by the time that you?
No,
it took.
It still took. The shower took.
That's always good. Let's wrap up the show.
Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough. He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly, not good.
I'll start with the guest today, Dave Minook, for Cheers and Jeers.
I'm going to cheer Movember Winnipeg. They kicked off the Movember month yesterday at Red River College. It's a great, great thing that they're doing. They're putting a lot of work. There's a number of guys who just volunteer their time and effort. Yep. They all have other jobs, but they take as much time as they can to get the message out about this issue of men's health. And it's mental health. It's physical health. It's really important that people support in any way they can, whether it's through donations, growing a mustache, just, you know, tweeting about it. So really, I cheer to the Movember crew and the Illegal Curve crew, who's also doing Movember.
If you want to support Team Illegal Curve, go to the website, illegalcurve.com.
Yeah, we have
for the entire month in the morning papers, there's a link to our Movember
that's
page.
Right.
By the way, Dave's going to have this out in a few days, but we're going to have some Jets on our team again this year.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, so quickly, I'm gonna cheer Pavel Bure. They're going to retire his number tonight in Vancouver, so I think that's great. He was always one of my favorite players. In his short period in the NHL, he was one of those dynamic players, and he paved the way for other skilled players, so it's going to be great. I forget who Vancouver's playing tonight.
Toronto,
so look out for that. That's the late game?
No, it's the early game.
Oh, the early game. Okay, so look out for that in Vancouver.
The cheer is good. The rest of the details were lacking a little bit.
I just want to get in with quick jeer. I'm jeering Ray Emery and the ref who didn't stop the Braden Holtby fight.
You're stealing my jeer right now.
Look, sorry, he was wailing on Braden Holtby on the back of his head. You can't even punch a guy in the back of the head in the UFC. How you can do that in the NHL is ridiculous.
Drew, just be thankful that Remus isn't stealing your
I gave you guys
lock.
A whole segment of getting locked out of the locker. Let me do a jeer. I never jeer.
Hey, no, we're giving it to you. Yeah. We're giving it to you.
Getting a little emotional there.
Take it easy, Reed. Yeah,
keep your towel on.
I don't know why you're clothed. You're not in a towel. Just, you know, relax.
That's it for this Saturday in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to our guests, Scott Powers from ESPNChicago.com, Mike Colligan from Forbes Sports Money and TheHockeyWriters.com, and the voice of the Boston Bruins on the New England Sports Network, Jack Edwards. In case you missed any of the program, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, the Certified General Accountants of Manitoba, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, and the Linden Market Dental Center. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Programming, though, Tuesday this coming week for NHL Midweek. Again, Tuesday, 6 to 8 here on TSN 1290. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show next Saturday's 12 p.m. start time here on TSN 1290. Remind you to stay tuned. Hustler and Lawless are next, and then Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power hour. For Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Tim and producer Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.